Hello and welcome to the first episode of the Big Red Wine Pod. I am your co-host Riley.
I'm your co-host Elliot.
And we are here to drink and talk about Husker football. And we are here to commiserate with you.
That's right.
In the sad days of Husker football as it currently stands. We are lifelong Husker fans, born and raised in Lincoln, Nebraska. But we're not going to get into the weeds in this podcast. We're just going to talk about football, kind of a general overview a little bit, and go week by week as the season goes, if there is a season at all, and kind of be there with you through the pain and through the victory.
Right. Just the idea was kind of to just have it be organic and have it be kind of the everyman podcast. You know, we're not going to get into the stuff like recruiting and all those nitty-gritty details. You know, we're going to make mistakes and mispronounce names and you know.
We're not going to talk a bunch of X and O's and coach speak. Yeah. We're not doing that shit. It's going to be as if you're talking to some people at a bar as you're watching a game or talking to one of your buddies. That's what this is going to be. It's not going to be in the weeds like Elliot mentioned. Right.
If you're the guy that tweets at recruits, this one is probably not for you.
Honestly, that's exactly it. If you're tweeting at recruits
as a grown man,
just turn the shit off now. We're here just to talk about football and kind of realistically as fans, but also as fans that aren't like, you know, living in a 1995 Husker bubble, where we think that no matter what, Nebraska is somehow going to return to dominance like in 2 years because that's not realistic. But we're just going to talk about, you know, what we think is going to happen throughout the season, week by week. But right now, we're just going to go over the position groups on offense, defense. We'll kind of touch on a couple other things later. So let's just get right into it. Elliot, I know, wants to start with offense, and let's start with offensive line.
Yeah.
And Elliot, tell me, do you think the offensive line is going to be better than last year, worse than last year, or pretty much a wash?
I think it will be better. I mean, last year, everybody on that line was so young and green. I think, like, the starting center, Cam Juergens, I want to say he had, like, a week before the South Alabama game. He had 1 week of practice under his belt.
That's good.
Yeah, right, yeah. So,
what could go wrong?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the fact that everybody comes back is huge. And there were games where you could see the offensive line turning it on a little bit and kind of starting to gel and get it. I would say maybe more so they showed flashes like that, maybe more so than any other group last year.
And you were at the Wisconsin game, right?
Yeah, the Wisconsin game. I know I reference that a lot when we text back and forth because the Wisconsin game was like I was at that game and I was in North Stadium, so good view, you know, of the drives. And I was jumping out of my seat when seeing the running lanes that the line was opening up, because they were running lanes that we haven't seen for years. And it was kind of like, yes, this is starting to develop. This is starting to be real. And having it be against Wisconsin gave it a little credibility.
Sure.
You know, I'm sure they've done that against Southern Miss and South Alabama and those other teams, but to do it against the school with that credibility, like Wisconsin, it was like, oh my God, yes, this is happening. Mm-hmm. So, my gut says that they'll be better. There's some depth with some younger guys, coming in, some younger, newer guys. So that should help. And just kind of the one thing that I don't know has gotten any attention at all, but the fact that they haven't really had any attrition in the offensive line as compared to other position groups where it seems like every week, you know, somebody was leaving, somebody was transferring or retiring or whatever, whereas the offensive line has really had a lot of stability, which is what they've needed.
I think the whole team has needed that, and I think it definitely helps when you have, you know, the front of your offense really anchored by guys who are developing chemistry and experience, and they have, they should have that both on-field and off-field chemistry, you know, within the meeting rooms when they're all, you know, going over film and whatnot. I think that's going to really show how they are able to gel and communicate, because I think that's something that's a little overlooked. If you pull out two pieces from the from an offensive line and you're returning three starters, but one of the people you're not returning is a center and one's a left tackle, like that's going to feel like a different offensive line in a lot of ways. Totally. So, yeah, I agree with you. I personally think the offensive line should be improved. And honestly, it might be the most improved position overall from last year.
I could see that. For sure.
To me. And we're going to touch on quarterback, and I know everyone is that's on the forefront of their mind.
Right.
But I do think offensive line probably has the most likelihood of being the most improved offensive group overall.
For
Would
sure.
you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
Great. Okay, so let's move then just to tight end. And what are your thoughts on the tight end position?
I think it will be improved with the addition of I believe it's Travis Vokolek from he was the transfer from
Rutgers, correct?
Rutgers, yeah.
Okay.
He transferred in and had to sit out last year, but he adds a lot of size and experience, you know, Big Ten experience, which is huge. I never thought that the tight end position was really a weak spot. It was just I never considered it to be a liability. If anything, I think they've been underused. So my hope is that by adding Vokolek to the mix with I believe it's Raftel, Allen, and
Stoll,
Jack Stoll. Yeah, that's a pretty solid group. You got to imagine there's a lot of size there. Like I would hope that they start to kind of use them as that safety blanket, you know, like they don't necessarily have to be like Travis Kelce.
Mm-hmm.
But I wish they would go to him a little more, right? Especially given it with how wide receiver has not been the most reliable unit on the offense. It's like we have some guys here at this tight end position that are, you know, they're big, they're 6'6", 6'7", you know, they're big targets. Use them. Why not? In the red zone, you know? Like,
yeah, here's kind of my thought on the tight end position, and I heard someone else reference this on another podcast, and I can't remember which one for the life of me, but I thought they pretty much hit it perfectly. It's a position that every year I have so much belief in there being a step forward and improvement in production, and I mean offensive production. I agree with you. I don't know that anyone's ever said, like, oh, man, every time we have an inline tight end, that guy can't block worth anything.
Right.
I don't really think that's an issue, but we have not – we have not used our tight ends, I think, in a way that they could be used to create some offensive production.
Sure.
And you see flashes. I mean, I know every single time you see a tight end catch a 20-yard pass, people start freaking out like, this is it. We're going to turn it around.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't happen. So until I see an actual use of the tight end position in a way that where they're catching passes, even like if it's just red zone,
right,
I would be delighted to see the tight end group as a whole catch like 10 touchdowns, because that means that means you're getting into the red zone. And even if it's just a short yardage, I mean, if you're, you know, first and 10 on the 13, what a great spot to be able to utilize a guy who's 6'5", 6'6", you know?
Exactly. Like that's what is kind of baffling sometimes. There's such size there, and it's like they go away from it, and it's just – as a fan, it's challenging to watch, because even if you're in the red zone and you target a tight end, at best, it's a 50-50 ball. At worst, it's an incompletion or a pick. But you can either have a 50-50 ball or he gets flagged, the DB gets flagged for PI.
You know, jumping on him.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So it's like, why don't we do that a little more instead of, you know, some of the other, choices?
Yeah, you wonder if perhaps there's not – the trust there between the staff and that position group.
Sure.
Because that's the thing we never know for sure is, you know, is there a reason they're not throwing to these guys? You know,
right,
is it because
right,
they've not
right.
developed as pass catchers? And
right.
if that's the case, then you have to trust. I mean, if you're believing that, you have to trust that the coaching staff has said, we have not seen it in practice
sure.
for you to be able to, for us to put our hopes in you
right.
on third and 10
sure.
on the 13
right.
when – you know, well, if we don't get it to you, then we might have to try to kick a field goal. And, oh, by the way, we're on our third field goal or our third place kicker for the year, you know. So you never know, right? But you want to hope that the development's there. You want to hope that the talent's there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. We have a guy coming in, like you said, the Rutgers transfer. He should be able to at least show that he can play at the D1 level, not just at the D1 level, but at, you know, against Big Ten competition.
Right.
So I don't know. I personally believe that there should be development as far as a production standpoint for that tight end position, but I'm going to say it's going to be a wash. I think kind of what we got last year from the tight end position won't be much different than what we get next year.
Sure.
Unless we get like annihilated in injuries at wide receiver.
Sure.
Because wide receiver is already so thin.
Right.
That's maybe the only variant there that I could see happening, where all of a sudden you kind of feel like we don't really have an option here at this point. You know, we got some guys that are 6'5" and they can catch. Kinda.
Yeah.
So we kind of have to use them, right?
Yeah.
And it might turn into that. And we've already seen Hickson. I believe it's Hickson, right? Hickman go from the tight end position over to the wide receiver position.
Yeah.
I mean, some might say, oh, you know, he's better built for it. But I mean, there's a pretty compelling argument to be made that it's just that we were short on bodies wide receiver, and we had an abundance of what they felt was depth at the tight end position.
Right. Right. And that's a guy, Chris Hickman is 6'6".
A little bit of a wild card.
Yeah, and I mean, I think he made his debut in the Maryland game. At least that's where I remember seeing him, because he was shockingly thin. Too thin, just looking at him.
Alarmingly thin.
Yes, yes. But.
And do you mean that as a tight end?
As a tight end, okay, yeah. As a wide receiver, it's like, yeah, that looks about right.
Yep,
but as
yep.
a tight end, I'm thinking like, oof, I don't know.
Not enough muscle.
But again, 6'6", I'm talking about when we're in the on the like the 30-yard line, 25-yard line, throw it to the corner. He's 6'6", and chances are most Big Ten corners, I guess because it's on Big Ten schedule this year.
Right.
You're gonna be able to create some mismatches there. There's gonna be some 6-foot corners, and Hickman's gonna have the size on him. Throw it up to him in the corner. It's not going to hurt anything.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, I think, again, barring some injuries at wide receiver that kind of force us to use the tight end position more, unless the wide receiver position overall is just not showing up.
Right.
But you can make an argument. Last year they didn't really show up outside of JD, and now JD's gone, and we'll get up to that. But anyway, we'll see. I mean, there's definitely room for there to be more production from the tight end group.
Sure.
I feel like we're talking about the tight end group a lot more than we should probably.
Sure.
But, and we kind of glossed over the offensive line because we feel good about it, right?
Right. I would say so. Yeah. Offensive line, I think, I just don't see scenarios where they're worse off.
Right.
Than they were.
I think the offensive line has the most returning experience as
mm-hmm,
a group
mm-hmm.
and has the most depth.
Right.
On the offense.
Right.
And for that reason, even if there's some injuries, you feel pretty good about.
Sure.
And on top of that, the talent has been there.
Right.
We have seen a very specific goal of the coaching staff to go out and get better offensive linemen.
It's clear that that's been a point of emphasis for them, which is awesome to see, because I don't recall really seeing that emphasis ever in the last 5-10 years.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, yeah, we got a guy here and there. But with this staff, they've made it very clear. Like, we have a type of guy we're going after, and we're going after him hard, which is – it's good to see. It's like, okay, you clearly see that there's an issue there, and you're working to address it. So I think as far as offensive line goes, I think they will improve the run game, and I think they will improve the pass protection as well, which is going to – the offense will go as the offensive line goes.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Maybe with a little asterisk there with Adrian, but we'll get to that as well.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Anyway, okay, so let's move. Let's just go to Adrian, or the quarterback position, but we'll talk mostly about Adrian here. What are your thoughts on Adrian going into this next year? Obviously, last year he struggled mightily.
Sure.
I think we all kind of are aware that there were some injuries there that he was kind of battling through. Makes you a little bit nervous about how the coaching staff views the depth there if you have an injured quarterback and you continue to throw him out there every year or every week. I'm sorry. Right. So what are your thoughts on that? And then also, I want to get to McCaffrey after we talk about Adrian and about what that might look like going forward.
Okay. I think Adrian, he will improve in 2020 upon what he did in 2019. I think you'll see more of the 2018 Martinez, and this is why. It's tough because there's so many layers to it. In 2018, Martinez was the new kid on the block, and Big Ten defensive coordinators didn't know what to game plan for him. So he was just kind of this wild card.
Coming off an injury.
From high school. Yeah. And so they were like, we don't quite know what this is. And then, he kind of came in and was very athletic, made some good throws, made some good runs, and we're like, oh, my God, we got it. We finally have a quarterback. I think what gets missed in the 2019 discussion when it seemed like he regressed, I think what gets a little glossed over is in 2018, he made freshman mistakes, as you do. But he could lean on Tanner Farmer, Gerald Foster for the run game. He could lean on Divino Zigbo to be a threat. He could lean on Stanley Morgan to just throw up a 50-50 ball and let him go get it. And I think maybe we undervalued those four guys' performance in 2018 a little bit and maybe overvalued Martinez. And then 2019 happens, and those four guys are gone. Martinez has a brand new offensive line. The center, who, like, I think
he's learning the position.
Right. He's learning the position. I think Cam Jurgens had like a week of practice under his belt before the Southern Alabama game.
Which is always good.
Yes. Yeah. That's ideal.
That's exactly what you want.
Yeah,
7 days.
Cam Jurgens was still learning how to snap the ball. And we have virtually no wide receiver threat outside of JD, kind of with Wandale, but not, you couldn't lean on Wandale. Because clearly when we did in the Illinois and Northwestern games, he was just getting decimated out there. So a lot of the support that helped prop up Martinez in 2018 got taken away from him. And if not just taken away, his surrounding cast got worse. And then he performed worse. So it's like, oh my gosh, he's getting piled on. And then you throw on a knee injury, a shoulder injury. It's not shocking that seemingly regressed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but I wouldn't, attribute it to him, thinking he's the big man on campus and he doesn't need to work hard anymore, which has kind of been hinted at in a couple articles, that maybe he wasn't taking things as seriously. I don't think so. He just doesn't strike me as that kind of guy.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. I don't think he, and I could be wrong, but
sure.
When I hear the guy speak,
right,
first of all, that does not sound like 20-year-old.
Right.
When I hear Adrian Martinez speak, I feel like I'm listening to a 35-year-old from the NFL speak. I mean, the guy is as poised when he's speaking to the media, if he is as poised as he is when he speaks to the media as he is with his teammates and how he goes about his business with the coaching staff. There's no reason for me to believe he is not taking it seriously.
Right.
So I totally agree with that.
And I don't like it when you hear about that, because it's, you never want to assume somebody else's intentions, especially one of a 20-year-old kid. And, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes and all that. But I think the kind of wild card thing that will motivate Martinez maybe the most is all this Joe Burrow stuff. Whenever we heard about Joe Burrow last year, it was Joe Burrow, Nebraska.
Had Burrow been here,
yes,
sure.
And then you get to the NFL draft where he's going number one overall. Trey Wingo's losing his mind about how Scott Frost didn't recruit Joe Burrow to come play and how Joe Burrow's so much better. The quote, is he better than what we got? No Husker fan out there at the end of 2018, no Husker fan was like, I don't know, I kind of wish we had Joe Burrow. We were all down for the cause. We were all riding with Adrian. So here, I think him having to hear all that constantly is going to give him a little bit extra drive. There was an article too that about the players coming back to campus, and they said Martinez was the first guy back. He was the first player to come back. So that tells me that he's probably got a little something to prove. So
sure. So I do like that you brought up, you know, 2018, these are the core players around him that allowed him to succeed. 2019, those players are largely gone. He's working with a pretty fresh, talented, but new offensive line. Physically, I would say they're pretty mature, but you know, probably not as strong as you're going to be going up against a senior or junior from Iowa or Wisconsin or surely Ohio State. And suddenly, with the injuries compounding on top of that, Adrian doesn't look as good. If we're looking to next year with Adrian, do you think that there's still going to continue to be that deficit of skill position talent around him that's going to make his job a little harder? And, you know, does that impact how he views, maybe I need to run the ball because I don't really trust my wide receivers? And does that put him in a position where he could get hurt a little more? I'm playing devil's advocate a little bit here, but I think it's a realistic concern because trust is really important with your quarterback and your receivers.
Right.
And I can only imagine what it's like to be Adrian Martinez throwing to guys who are just total, I'm going to say it, scrubs at the wide receiver position outside of perhaps Omar Manning, and we'll get to that.
Right.
And seeing so many guys drop the ball, not be where they're supposed to be, and just getting so frustrated that it suddenly becomes conceivable that during a game on 3rd and 8, you might say, whatever, I'm running. And you do that enough times throughout a season, that's how you can get injured again. So what are your thoughts on his surrounding talent this year compared to last year? Not 2018, but last year.
I getcha. Surrounding talent, I think it's better than 2019. I think it will be. I think because on paper, Mills – on paper, Big Ten defenses will have to prepare for Mills, who should be a threat. They will have to prepare for Wandale, who should be a threat. They should have to prepare for Omar Manning, who should be a threat. The running back position has some depth there. So now, I mean, still young depth, but still they have bodies there, whereas last year they kind of didn't.
Sure.
They were lining up Wandale at the running back spot, like, 20 times a game, and that's not quite. I could be wrong, but I don't think that's how they want to use Wandale.
Yeah, I think the Duck R really wants to be a not a 50-50 split, but you want to be able to have that be your movable chess piece on the field, where you don't really get that when that person just by default becomes your running back.
Exactly. So I do think that he will have some options around him, and I think that the Big Ten defense is having to game plan for those guys will take a little bit off Martinez. Because basically last year was you shut down Martinez, you're going three and out, boom, you get the ball back.
Sure.
So if nothing else, I think there are guys that will keep the opposing defenses honest, if nothing else. Even if they're not, you know, even if Omar Manning isn't, you know, doesn't
Stanley.
Have a huge – yeah, even if he's not Stanley, if he's a – less of a presence, they're still going to have to game plan for him, you know, which last year, who was the big body wide receiver we could hit?
Yeah, that didn't exist.
Yeah, so now it does. So you got to think that just makes it a little easier, a little more weight off of Martinez's shoulders. Does he call his own number? Maybe. I wouldn't be shocked by that. Yeah, if he's got a little something to prove, if he's got a little axe to grind or chip on shoulder or whatever, you know, cliche phrase you want to throw in there, I wouldn't be shocked by that. Because I think there's part of him that wants to show people, yeah, this is my job. I earned this. You know, I'm not just here because Scott Frost went with me in year one and is just riding it out just for the sake of it. He wants to show that he's the man, especially and I was at the Iowa game last year too. People were calling for Luke. And as a player, I don't care who you are, even if Martinez is tight with Luke, you do not want to hear that.
Right.
You know. So, yeah, I think I could see him doing that. And it does it pose an injury risk? Sure. Yeah. But you got to think if he's being a little more strategic about it, hopefully it doesn't doesn't go that way.
Yeah, and to be clear, I don't think you shelter Martinez, because if you do that, you're now taking away one of the things that makes him a great player, a dynamic player, right? So it's really important that you don't try to protect Adrian at all costs, by which I mean never let him run or tell him not to run. One of the things that makes him a great player is that he has that ability and really creates that dual threat capability.
There was one game, I can't remember which game it was, but it was like a second and long, I think. And Martinez, it was a pass play, and he had kind of rolled out, I think, to the right, and there was open space. And he hesitated, he pump faked, he did, you know, and then he took off, but he only got like 1 yard. And the camera, and Martinez was right next to Scott, and the camera went to the both of them, and you could see Scott, and he goes, run, he motioned like, go, take off, dude, go, get after it. And so it's one of those moments that was kind of cool to see that he trusts them.
Sure.
You know, he trusts them to make that decision. Sometimes you got to make an executive decision and just go.
And last year specifically,
right.
You don't know how much an injury might have played. Sure. You know, you can make a player hesitant, yeah, to move forward. So you just touched on Luke. Let's go there. I know this is kind of the rail you're not supposed to touch here.
Sure.
I want to make this very clear. I do not think there's an open quarterback competition going into next year. However, I don't think it is a foregone conclusion that Adrian Martinez is the starter throughout the entire season. And I'm not saying that because I think there's something wrong with Adrian necessarily. I just think, for exactly the point that you made earlier, I think Scott wants to win. Mm-hmm. And if Scott looks at Adrian, who, again, is coming off some injuries, and he gets injured again, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that he goes to Luke, who I have no idea what his development has been as a passer. I think we all know he can run pretty well.
Right.
If his development is not there as a passer, I don't think he can touch the field on a regular basis. You know, not just a play here and play there, but I mean like on a regular, multiple times a game in a row. But if it has developed, is it out of the realm of possibility that we're 5 games into the season, Adrian does not look the same because of an injury, and all of a sudden Luke takes the field? Possibly. What are your thoughts on the possibility of Luke either winning this role outright or perhaps taking it over due to an injury?
I think it would be more likely that he takes it over due to an injury. I just don't – you got Martinez coming into year 3. I don't see a scenario where Luke unseats him outside of him just being a freak athlete, which, you know, he is. He's a McCaffrey, so – he has that gift, but I just don't see a scenario where Luke takes it from him. I think Luke's too talented to leave on the sideline too. I hope that they are putting in some Luke packages like they had. Like you said, Scott wants to win.
Yep.
And that was very evident when in that Iowa game when they had some Luke packages and they had some Noah packages too. I think he sees the field regularly. I don't know what capacity because probably as a wide receiver, maybe as a decoy, maybe as a quarterback. I don't know. That old adage, you know, if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have one.
Mm-hmm. But I don't think we're there yet.
I don't think so, but I think it's you're just utilizing talent, and he's, like I said, he's too talented to be on the sideline.
Yeah, and the great thing about Scott, I think, as far as his – offensive mind is that he's really good, I think, at utilizing talent in the right way. Mm-hmm. And I think the number one position you can look at to see that is the Duck R position.
Right.
That's not a position that exists. I mean, it's not a true position per se, right? But the Duck R is not something that exists in every offense.
Mm-hmm.
It exists in Scott Frost's offense.
Right.
And he has created that as a part of his offense because he I think, acknowledges there are some players that do some things really well, and you can't really put him in as a full-time wide receiver or a full-time running back. With Luke, you know, he's a quarterback, but he's kind of a quasi running back that has an arm on him, and it's hard to keep that guy off the field, like you said. And I do agree. I don't think that he wins this quarterback position outright at any point in this season, just because I really do believe in Adrian Martinez. I want it to be clear that I'm not hating on Adrian. I think Adrian's a really, really talented quarterback, and I think In fact, I think he's going to get drafted someday, you know, barring any major injuries.
Sure.
I think the NFL is going to look at him. Full disclosure, I'm a Dolphins fan. It's a terrible existence. Elliot here is a Kansas City fan.
That's right.
His life's going a little bit better right now than mine on the NFL front. But I listened to a Dolphins podcast. And I won't get into it really. But when they do mention who are some quarterbacks we could see the Dolphins maybe drafting, mm-hmm. I have heard Adrian Martinez's name multiple times on that podcast.
Wow.
And they're talking about not as like the future starter of the Dolphins, especially now that they have Tua. But they have mentioned it as like, is this a guy maybe you invest a fourth round pick in, fifth round pick in?
Sure.
And maybe try to develop him. So if the Dolphins, and this is just, you know, podcasters, but if there are people talking about that now, this far out, there's clearly some identification of some talent there.
Right.
And I can promise you that the NFL is not sleeping on Adrian. I'm sure the what appeared to be regression last year was not great for his stock draft or his draft stock. But I do think that he's going to be drafted in the future because he has a lot of talent to run. You know, running the ball,
mm-hmm.
and he also is pretty accurate.
Oh yeah,
and he has a really surprisingly pretty good deep ball.
Yeah,
when he's not injured, as we saw in his freshman year, which you don't usually see that from freshmen.
Right. I remember the Colorado game in 2018. You know, Martinez's first start, and I think it's a deep pass to JD, and I remember because it was he just put it right. And I was like, oh my God, this dude, he's going to be a first rounder.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking.
He's 18, he's 19,
yeah. And he's just dropping it in there like it's nothing. And so, yeah, he has the size, the tools to, I think, like you said, get drafted. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility.
Not at all.
I mean, we've seen.
If Tanner can get drafted, Adrian Martinez can get drafted.
Yeah, Tanner Lee, yeah. Yeah.
We won't get into that, but my point is if the NFL looked at Tanner Lee and said this guy is worth a draft pick,
right.
There's no doubt in my mind that somebody in the NFL is going to look at Adrian and say, is this kid worth a mid to late round draft pick to see what we have here? I mean, I'm not saying he's Gardner Minshew, but like in the same way that you could look at certain guys and kind of project some value there, I think you could see that with Adrian Martinez, even more so if he kind of goes back to his 2018 production.
For sure. I'm with you on that.
So, okay, I think we're in agreement with as far as anything, whether or not we're going to see McCaffrey, you know, come in.
Yeah.
Probably not going to win the job outright, but you could maybe see an injury pushing him into a position where suddenly there might be some talk.
Sure. Yeah, I could see some clamoring for that. Because to be fair to Luke, you know, Martinez hasn't finished a season.
Right.
You know, he's missed games both years. He missed an entire year of high school because of it. So to think that, you know, an injury-prone guy might not make it, that's not crazy. You know, obviously we're not hoping for anything like that. But, if Martinez continues to struggle, I think that those chants probably become a little louder. But I do think we see Luke I do think we see Luke on the field more. I mean, one thing to kind of pump the brakes on, and I'm kind of rambling here, but I don't think Luke took one pass last year or threw one pass last year from the pocket. I want to say
is that right?
I think every pass he threw was a rollout.
Interesting. Okay.
Which is to kind of throw a little cold water on some of this. Luke is going to.
Yeah, I think there's been a consensus. I don't know that it's overwhelming. That Luke is not developed as a passer. And I think the consensus is there because if he was, we'd see a lot more of him getting in as a passer, right?
Sure, right.
But we really haven't.
Yeah.
But he's also listed as a quarterback, so as a defense, you can't just completely discount that,
totally,
right?
Yeah.
You can't stack the box and assume it's going to be a run every time.
Right, right.
So, like I said, the only way I think that you even see a real conversation about Luke taking this job away from Adrian, and I'm not even talking about just outright, I'm talking about because of an injury. Like, he takes it away because of an injury because he's playing too well. I think the only way that's possible is if he makes some real serious big strides as a passer. Whether or not that happens, I don't know. It seems a lot more unlikely to happen given this COVID stuff, right?
Sure.
Just less time on the field, less time with your teammates.
Yeah.
You know, can you practice, you know, your accuracy and all that kind of stuff outside without your teammates? Sure. but it's not the same.
Right, right.
As getting that chemistry. So
I wonder if maybe, you know, the way they evaluate the quarterbacks, maybe, and this might be a little too far-fetched, but in terms of Luke taking a job from Martinez, maybe one of those elements could be turnovers.
Mm.
If Luke has fewer turnovers, because that, you know, not to go back to, oh my God, the 90s, but that's what separated Brooke Berninger and Tommy Frazier. Frazier had fewer turnovers in practice. And maybe that's the case, because Martinez hasn't, I wouldn't say he's reckless with the ball, but there are times where he coughs it up at the worst possible
sure.
moment. Like that. I remember that Colorado game where he was going out for a run, and it was Colorado 2019, and he just gets drilled, and the ball comes out right in midfield. It's like, oh my God, you know, like, not now. But I wonder if Luke is just happens to be a little more protective, or I guess a little cuts down on the turnovers. If that could be something that they would put at a higher premium, I guess.
Sure. Yeah. I still think his completion percentage has to be high enough to warrant that.
Oh, right.
At some
right.
point, if you're throwing, you know, Tommy numbers where it's kind of a coin flip, 52-55% completion percentage. At that point, you're just going. There's enough three and outs there. You might as well be turning the ball over. Now,
right.
Field position's different, obviously, than you know, an interception. But my point being is that I think the development as a passer has to be there. But you're right. If it's, you know, if all of a sudden, you know, you see Luke throwing 60-ish% in mm-hmm. practice, and you see Adrian throwing 65%, but Adrian's coughing the ball up a lot
right,
more.
Right.
Then that conversation becomes a little bit more real.
Right. Exactly.
And you never know. So, okay. I think we spent enough time on the quarterback
yep.
position. Probably overkill for a position that I think is probably going to be
it's
Adrian's.
Very settled.
It's going to be Adrian's probably going forward, but, we have no football right now. We have no sports at all right now. So, this is what we do. So next let's move to the running back position.
Yep.
What are your thoughts on that position as a whole going forward into next year?
As a whole, I feel more confident about it, because of the added depth of some young guys there. You got Mills, who's, again, I don't see Mills being unseated as the starter, but we have some guys that were able to sub in. Whereas last year, it felt like we didn't have anybody. It felt like, you know, they were just like grasping at straws to just get warm bodies on the field. And I think I believe Sevion Morrison, Marvin Scott, and Ramir Johnson,
Ronald Tompkins.
Yeah, it's like, okay, finally we have some guys in there that
and they're young.
Yeah,
to be fair, they're young.
Right, but
we do think there's some talent there. And to be fair with the running back position, I would say making the jump from high school to college and then from college to the NFL, probably the least curve as far as learning, mm-hmm. learning, you know,
right.
there. Either you have that talent or you don't,
right.
you know.
Right.
I don't think there's any doubt that if, you know, Reggie Bush went into the NFL a little bit earlier, he probably still would have been the same player he
sure.
was in the NFL throughout his career.
Right.
Now, he didn't, you know, light up the league like some people thought he was going to, but he was still a good NFL
productive.
Running back
yeah.
for years.
Oh, sure.
So I think these guys coming in, if they have to get some reps because, you know, Diedrich gets hurt a little bit, I think somebody's going to rise to the top of that, you know, four players I think we mentioned there.
Yeah, yeah.
Someone's going to make that jump up. I think probably Ramir is probably most likely to do that.
He got some touches towards the end of the year last year.
Which tells you that there's some comfortability
right.
there with the coaching staff.
Right, right. So, yeah, it's between some of those guys, you'd think that one of them would emerge as a threat. You know, I hate to bring this up, but if you think if Mo Washington was still here, add Mo Washington to that
mm-hmm.
list.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
it's like, whoa, that could be a backfield. Like that
right.
could be a big threat. And again, to kind of echo some of the sentiment with offensive line, that's a position that does feel a little more settled.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I've gone back and watched some games, you know, from 2018 and 2019, on YouTube and stuff. And there were guys I forgot we had Greg Bell.
Yeah.
The 2018
yeah.
Colorado game. And it's like Greg Bell for 5 yards. I'm like, oh my God, I forgot about this dude. And There's a couple other ones in there, but it's like, okay, it feels a little more settled. We will not need to rely on Wandale to be our, you know, our
the workhorse. Running,
yeah, the sub. he'll be able to be a little more like the Dakar of what was envisioned. So I think it's I think it will be better than 2019? Yes. Again, it's going to largely depend on how the offensive line progresses, but I feel better about it. I feel better about the running back room now than I did last year.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think in part is because of what you said about the offensive line. I think the offensive line does take a step forward, and mm-hmm. I think that inherently means that the running right. backs take a step forward
exactly.
in production. Right. So that is a good point. Now, as we're kind of going from talking about running back to the wide receiver group, kind of in between there is that duck R position, right? We have Wandale. Yeah. Who is the backup to Wandale at that duck R position? If you know, I don't know that that's not a true position
right.
per se. That's kind of going to be up to Scott. But do you think that the staff has somebody in mind to maybe fill that position?
I would imagine they would.
Okay.
I can't imagine having such a significant part of the offense and just thinking like, okay, we got one guy to ride this out.
And if he gets hurt, then we just take it
yeah,
out completely.
Yeah.
That's kind of my thought. So have you heard or read anything, whether it's the message boards? And I know those are all, you know, everyone
right,
kind of
right.
putting in their two cents, but
right.
is there any talk about, you know, is it a Sevion Morris? Is Ramir even talked about? Is that?
I haven't seen anything mentioned to that effect. So no, I think I'm curious if maybe another wide receiver actually might take that position, like Marcus Fleming, Alante
okay,
Brown.
That's interesting.
I think Alante Brown.
Okay. Yeah. Alante Brown.
Is that? I want to make sure again.
So you're saying there might even be a younger guy in the wide receiver room who could,
like Betts,
instead of having a guy go from a running back position to lining him outward,
yeah.
having maybe a bigger wide receiver
right.
kind of lineup to take
I
some.
I can see that. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I don't know though.
Sure. Okay.
Sure.
So all right, let's move on to the the scariest part of the offense going forward.
Boy.
The wide receiver group. What are your thoughts on this group going forward? I think it's. I don't think anyone disagrees that the wide receiver group as a whole will be worse. I think that's pretty fair to say.
Yeah.
Now, with that being said, it's hard to get much worse than it was last year.
Yeah.
JD was your shining spot in a best case scenario. I think Omar Manning gives us the same production that JD did. As a kid who's never played D1
sure.
College football, coming in and into the Big Ten, and if he can repeat what JD gave us last year,
mm-hmm.
we should all be very happy with that.
Sure. Oh, for sure.
And with that being said, behind Omar, it's not great.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about a walk-on with
Cade
yeah. Warner. I know we have the Hickman, who we talked about earlier,
mm-hmm.
Who has not had a lot of impact to this point. Other than that, it's a lot of unproven guys.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I heard somewhere that the amount of actual catches that we have returning this year, it's abysmal. I mean,
yeah,
it's like
yeah.
it's less than 30.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not good. That's
right.
not what you want
right.
at all. So what are your thoughts on just knowing that this will probably be the worst spot overall on the offense? What are your thoughts on this position group? Yes, this year, but maybe in the next couple years, because that's really the
yeah.
only bright spot that we have with the position
group. Is the trajectory, yeah. I don't want to say I feel good about it, but I think they could equal their production from last year. And again,
Is that a best case scenario though?
Best case, yes.
Okay.
If Manning can be, if he can be that big play threat, if he can just, or even just that big presence that a defense has to prepare for, there's value in that. Losing JD is a big hit, and that's tough. Because you imagine Wandale, JD, and Omar, you know, lining
that
up.
That would have been
it's like,
actually pretty fun.
Oh my god!
If we're being honest.
Oh yeah.
Let me just ask you this real quick. Do you want to get into the JD thing? Because I kind of want to, but I
sure.
also kind of feel like it's
Let's
over.
Go. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's water under the bridge. I mean,
I want to start off to be very clear. I am very pro player, and I don't want to speak for Elliot, you know, on this topic. I'm very pro player. If a player wants to leave, I'm for sure. it. My only thing with JD, and best of luck to him wherever he goes, whatever happens with him going forward, I just don't understand the decision from a football perspective.
Yeah.
That's my only thing with JD. I felt like no one on this offense was going to have more opportunity, except for maybe Wandale, than JD. He was going to set a school record. He was going to set himself up to be able to have those credentials that you want when you're entering into the NFL draft.
Sure.
Especially in a year where there's a lot of question marks, but JD looks like kind of a sure thing as far as the NFL is concerned.
Sure.
So with all that being said, why do you think JD did it? And if, I mean, no one knows, obviously,
but
why do you think JD did it? And where do you think he might end up?
I don't, you know, I have no idea. It's so difficult because, you know, we can only go off of what we see in the papers and what's reported and things like that. And the message board stuff is, you know,
rumors.
Yeah. It's so
you can't unreliable. Take that to the bank.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, and again, there was chatter about him not being down for the cause and maybe him being a little, maybe not a phenomenal teammate there. I don't want to say anything, you know, that would get misconstrued, but there was smoke around that. So I don't want to attribute anything to him that would be inaccurate because that's just not fair to him. It's difficult to understand the thought process with it. And I'm thinking maybe he didn't even really know, because if it was as simple as just wanting to get to a new place, don't you think he would have put his name in the transfer portal like pretty early? What was, you know, I believe he withdrew from classes in March or February. So he wasn't even enrolled. So by doing that, I think he has to get a waiver to even play next year, which he'll probably get just because with COVID, I think they're going to be very lenient on everything, which is fine. It doesn't bother me. But he didn't know that at the time. He just withdrew. So it's like, what's your plan here, man? I don't think he had one.
The only thing that makes sense to me, and a lot of this will depend on where he ends up, is he just wanted to be on a team that is going to win. That's the only thing to me that makes sense, where he said, I don't want to be on a team that wins 4 or 5 or 6 games. Now, I can say that now, not knowing where he's at, but that goes out the window if he decides to go to Illinois or something.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And I'm not saying he's going there. I've not heard that.
Right.
I'm throwing a team out there that's going to lose is my point. So, you know, he'd have to get a waiver. We understand all that to not lose his eligibility. But, you know, if he goes to Minnesota, that's a team that's winning more. They have a pretty easy schedule from what I understand going forward. So Minnesota should be a team that at least for one more year looks pretty good. And it's home for him, obviously, as we know, with his dad being a GM of the Vikings. So with that, I think you can make an argument for, I want to be on a winning team. But I mean, if the guy ends up transferring down and goes to Appalachian State,
sure,
you know, I get, I mean, Appalachian State will probably win at their division, but it's just a hard thing for me to wrap my head around.
Right. It's kind of, each nugget of information we got about it kind of pointed somewhere else.
Right.
Like, he withdrew from classes, like, oh, he's going home. Maybe football isn't for him. Maybe he got, you know, and he got dinged up pretty bad last year. So maybe he was just, you know, he comes from his dad, you know, being the GM of the Vikings. He doesn't need football. He doesn't need this to have the life that he wants. So maybe, you know, he was just like, you know, I had my fun with it, and I'm finished with it now.
Yeah, I mean, in that, we're speculating here,
right?
To be, you know, we don't have any inside information by any means. But, you know, is it possible that JD got into a sport that his dad was the GM in at the highest level of the sport, and so he got into it? He's also very talented, and then he got bored with it.
Sure.
But it's also possible that he is also highly competitive, and he just says, I want to go somewhere and win.
It's frustrating.
I'm not going to win 5 games here at Nebraska, and I don't give a damn if I'm the record holder on a bad Nebraska football team.
Right.
That's also possible. So
yeah.
I think we can't discount anything because we don't know for sure. We should have more clarity once the season starts and we find out where he's at or isn't at all.
Right. Yeah, that will – where he ends up, if anywhere, will answer a lot of those questions.
I agree.
So I know there was chatter on, I think, Twitter about TCU. I get that. Yeah, I mean that you look at the offense they run down there, and that he fits that. That makes sense. I get that.
Big 12 scores a lot now. Not a lot of great defense being played in the Big 12. Exactly. So
yeah, he's not going to get obliterated like I think it was Illinois, where he's just getting hung out to dry over the middle.
Sure.
So does something like that make sense? Like if that happens, I'm like, yeah, I get that. But yeah, like you said, if he goes to Cracker Barrel State, that doesn't
roast
compute.
Beef Tech.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Shout out to Nick Baller.
Yeah, hey Nick. But yeah, so it's a bummer, but Nebraska's in a place where they need guys who want to be there. And if he doesn't want to be there, that's fine. Like you said, I'm pro player too. Players, they have a finite
shelf life.
Yes, it is. Their careers are generally very short, even more so in college. Most of these guys, they're going to be working 9-to-5s in a couple of years anyway. So go have your fun, do what you want then. But from the fan perspective, it's a little tough to kind of wrap your head around. And yeah, but I wish him the best. I hope he does well and pursues what he wants.
Yeah, I'm on the same boat. I don't understand the decision, but it's his decision to make. Mm-hmm. I think he has every right to make it. Would I have wished he stayed? Absolutely. I would have loved to have seen him line it up. I agree with you wholeheartedly. If you have him as the main focus of a defense on the wide receiver position, and you have Omar Manning, who, again, I really want to hammer this. We have no idea what we're going to get with Omar.
Right.
Omar is coming from the JUCO level.
Right.
He was the number one wide receiver JUCO player, I believe, by both 24/7 and Rivals.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the number two overall JUCO player. That, to me, says that this is a kid who's talented enough to play at the D1 level. I'm not really concerned about that.
Yeah.
But until I see it, I have a hard time believing it. That's all.
I want to say he played a year at TCU.
Oh, is that right?
I think he did.
Did he actually play in games, though? Or was he just on the team?
Maybe that was the case.
Okay, because...
But even then, they're still being at a school like that, even just being there for a year.
Sure.
There's value.
Yeah, there's value there, for sure. I just think I want to see production on... Because, how many kids show up somewhere and then we don't get anything from them? Tyjon Lindsey was supposed to come to Nebraska and be the future of,
Right.
Nebraska's going to have a second-round draft pick, at the wide receiver position. When's the last time that happened? Tyjon didn't do anything here, right? So, so you can have Omar Manning go to a D1 program, not play, but he's there in practice. Mm-hmm. He goes to JUCO. He's really good. That's all great. And I'm not saying Omar is going to be a bust. I'm not saying that at all. I hope Omar's great. If we get JD production out of Omar, I will be on the moon happy. But I have a hard time just translating it without question.
Right.
And until we see it a little bit, and that might, and hell, I mean, if we... There's no non-con games now.
Right.
But if we go into Purdue, I think we all can agree that we think Omar is going to be a starter by nothing more than the lack of depth, right?
Right.
Omar's a starter. If Omar plays against Purdue, who's not going to have a great defense this year, I think we all can agree we're not big on Diaco Purdue. But especially in his first year there, because we know his first year here was a train wreck.
Yeah.
So if he goes into Purdue and he has, two catches or three catches, four catches for 28 yards, 35 yards, 52 yards, that's going to be pretty ho-hum. If he goes into Purdue and he has seven catches for 112 yards and a touchdown, sure, we're going to go, okay, we got to pay attention to this guy, right?
We got it.
So I don't know what we're going to get from him.
Yeah.
And I'm not even saying if he has a huge breakout game against Purdue, then the guy's, Megatron. I'm not saying that either. I'm just saying until we get a little production actually on the field, I don't know that I can automatically translate that as he was highly recruited or highly sought after from the JUCO ranks. Therefore, he will just turn it on at Nebraska in the Big Ten.
Right. I agree. Yeah. Until you see it, I don't think we could say that the wide receiver position will be better. But again, you mentioned early on in the trajectory of the position. I believe the 2020 class. Omar's class is 2020. Mm-hmm. I read in an article that that wide receiver group in that class was the number three wide receiver group recruiting wise in the nation. So it's like, hey, that's all right. You know,
yeah,
trajectory, that's good to see.
One of them
like,
being a JUCO, so there's only 2 years there.
Yeah.
So you got to take that into consideration. I do think that the trajectory of the wide receiver group going forward is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
In the same sense that I felt like the offensive line was going to get better because
right.
you saw the very explicit work being done
right.
to make sure that that group got better. And the funny thing about it is you look at a Scott Frost offense and you say, oh, yeah, we're going to have good wide receivers. We're going to have good skill position players.
Right.
And here we are talking about the offense and saying, this is the worst position on the offense,
yeah.
and it looks like it might be really bad
right
now. But I do think that because there is clearly a opportunity at the wide receiver position for high schoolers to say, like, oh, I can play pretty quickly.
For sure.
I'm going to play in a pretty dynamic offense.
Right.
I'm going to play in a conference that is a little bit more geared towards running the ball. And outside of, like, Ohio State and Penn State, you're not seeing a ton of wide receivers really blow up in the Big Ten. In Nebraska, you could maybe see – you can make an argument at least.
For sure.
For Scott Frost to be able to develop you, right?
Right.
So I do think the trajectory of the offense – or I keep saying offensive line. Though I do think the offensive line will be good. The wide receiver group to be much better in the coming years,
mm-hmm.
I think, is there.
For sure.
I don't think they're going to be good this year. I just think
yeah.
I think they're going to be at an absolute best – the same as they were last
right.
year, and that is not good still.
Right.
So that's my concern.
Yeah, I get you on that. It's tough, but it, if nothing else, like you said, we see the emphasis that the staff has put on getting depth there, and so that's at this point, this is all we could hope for.
I would agree with that.
So, yeah.
Okay, so do you want to go over to defense? Then
yeah.
at this point? Okay.
Yeah, let's do it.
So defensive line, what are your thoughts?
Just to
start off, penciled in.
Sure.
Assuming with the 3-4.
Sure.
We got Ben Stille, Deontay Thomas, and at that nose tackle position,
it's his little brother.
Is it Damian Daniels?
Yeah.
Okay, I was like, I saw Daniels. I was like, kind of thrown off there. Damian Daniels, okay.
Darian was the older one.
And he's gone now.
Yep, yep.
So we have Damian Daniels, Deontay Thomas, and Ben Stille. What are your thoughts on that going forward? You can touch on them, but also kind of the depth there as well.
I think the D-line will be a bit of a wash.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
I don't see it improving, but I don't see it getting worse. And I was thinking about this on my way over here about the D-line, how we had two guys got drafted, the Davis twins,
mm-hmm.
seniors, multiple year starters. If you just watched the film from last year and then were told, yeah, two of your D-linemen are going to the NFL and getting drafted. I mean, obviously they weren't, you know, first rounders or anything, but still there's a prestige in getting drafted. And did any of that production that they put out last year think, yeah, they're NFL guys?
Yeah, not at all.
I mean, like, their production, I thought, and this is, I'm not trying to slam these guys. I'm not trying to, you know, badmouth anybody. But I just didn't see it. I want to say that the D-line, the average yard per rush against the D-line last year, 4.8 yards average. And there were plenty of games where they were getting gashed and repeatedly. So I see that, and I think can a couple of younger guys in a junior college transfer equal that production? Yeah, I think so. And could they maybe be a hair better? Sure, I think. And I don't. Again, you talk about not getting in the X's and O's because I'm not a coach. I do not know how this stuff goes. But as I understand it, with the 3-4, a lot of that depends on linebacker play.
Mm-hmm.
And if the linebacker play is a little suspect, it can maybe make that D line production look worse than it really is. But it, you know, all I want out of the D line is just get a pass rush,
mm-hmm.
get a pass rush. Because it was that Purdue game last year. They had their third string quarterback, and he looked like Peyton Manning out there. just lighten him up, because he could just sit back there and just, you know, pick our defense apart, because there was just no pressure on him ever.
Right.
And I think they have some guys there too. Even in looking into the depth chart a little bit with Keem Green, Casey Rogers, Fildarius Payne. There's another young guy, Ty Robinson. I think he's from Arizona. I think he was one of the key pieces of the 2019
recruiting
class.
Yeah, he was highly sought after. Right. I know Michigan was going after pretty hard.
So it's like, do I think those guys can help rotate and kind of help equate the 2019 production? I think, yeah, I think at best it's a push.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. It always concerns me a little bit when you're not getting a lot of production from the older guys. Mm-hmm. And then you're saying, oh, well, the next guys will be better. But then I'm like, well, if they were better, why weren't they getting more play last year, right? Now, so that is always a little bit of a concern there. Part of it is, do you want to give them an opportunity because you know that they're trying to get drafted? We know that the Davis twins were very athletic, and that, I think, had a lot more to do with their being drafted than their production.
I think, yeah, you're right.
I mean, their 40 times were very impressive, and that is...
Were they, like, the best at the draft?
In their position, I think some of the top numbers. So they're very athletic. Now, you're not going to see that in the production, but here's the thing about coaches, is that they think, oh, they just weren't coaching them right. I can coach them right. Give them to me, and I will turn them into something, right? There's kind of that... you know, ego there with mm-hmm. coaches that exist mm-hmm. to say like, oh, well, why were you doing that with this guy? With this guy, you should be doing this, right? So, you know, part of it is, you know, did these guys get drafted on their potential to be something a little bit great?
Sure.
And they didn't get drafted super high, right? So you're kind of, you know, when you're drafting a defensive lineman in the fifth round or whatever, I don't remember exactly where they were drafted, but it's kind of Darth Rose. And you're saying, where's the upside there? With them, it's the athleticism.
Right.
So, you know, you're saying you're an athletic guy who's got Big Ten experience, you know, I think we can do something with you.
For sure.
But next year, I'm with you. I think it's a wash. I don't think the defensive line is going to really outperform its production numbers.
Mm-hmm.
With what you said earlier about a pass rush, when you're running a 3-4, a lot of what you're running has more to do with, more than anything, it has more to do with, like, can you just eat up space? That's really more than anything.
Right.
So if you're able to eat up the space with the D-line, I think that's really what you're looking for more than anything, because the linebackers are more of your pass rushers, right?
Right.
You're relying on your defensive ends at the linebacker position. I mean, they're essentially defensive ends. They're standing upright. You're hoping that they're going to be able to kind of give you some of that pressure, because when you have a nose tackle – nose tackles aren't getting sacks, right? But you want to have them to eat up space for those running backs.
Right.
So that's really what you're,
and stuff.
Plugging up holes. So that's really what you're hoping for when it comes to that. So I don't know. I think it's gonna be a wash overall.
I agree. Yeah. I would hope that it would improve year three, but again, it's another position. It's kind of a theme overall, is that they're building depth there.
Right.
So as long as we're seeing that, that's, I think,
You can be pretty happy with that.
Right,
because if the depth is there, then you feel like in the future you'll be okay. But for now, I just don't see it being much better overall. So then we'll go then next to the linebackers. What are your thoughts on that?
That's a wild card to me. I have no earthly idea how which way that could go, because they've. I think they got some JUCO guys in the last class. So those are ones that you kind of – obviously you hope that you can just plug and play a little bit. I don't want to say that they'll be better, but I don't know that they get much worse. There were some guys there, and again, it's not to throw anyone under the bus, but a lot of – some guys from last year that gave a lot of heart and effort but were just out of position or just whiffed.
Are you talking about Mo?
Yeah.
Listen, I love Mo Berry.
I do too.
I love him as a player. I don't think there's I should say I love him as a person. And I like him as a player.
Yes.
I think Mo Berry would have been a great linebacker 20 years ago. And I'm not hating on Mo Berry at all. All I'm saying is right now what the NFL wants, especially, is they want guys who are agile, can move, can change direction quickly, it can cover.
Sure.
That's not Mo Berry. Mo Berry is he really fits the mold of like a 1990s middle linebacker thumper type of guy.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying there's not a space for that in today's college football, sure, or the NFL, but there's not as much as there used to be.
Right.
Because now offenses really, really want to be able to spread the field a little bit more.
Right.
And I know people hate this, but be a little more multiple.
Sure.
And be able to make it harder for you to cover every inch of the field.
Right.
And Mo, that wasn't his strength.
No. I mean, he did provide a lot of value, I think, in his leadership and his buy-in to the program and kind of setting that tone. It, like,
I think players looked up to him.
Yes.
I think they thought, they looked at Mo and said, like, Mo works hard, so I'm going to work hard.
Yes.
And that can't be undervalued. And I think that's something that really should be talked about. Now, as far as the on-field production, like, you saw some missed tackles there. Mo can't cover because Mo is not the fastest guy.
Right.
That's just a physical limitation of Mo's, you know, has nothing to do with his ethic.
Correct.
Or his ability to work hard or be a leader on the field even.
Right.
And or his communication. I think Mo had all of those things. I think if Mo is a little bit faster and maybe a little bit lighter or a little bit taller,
sure,
you're talking about a guy who gets drafted at a pretty good spot, honestly. But he just didn't quite have those physical tools.
Right.
I actually do think the linebacker group as a whole will be marginally better.
Okay.
Not much better, but marginally better, because I do think when you look at who's there, I think Caleb Tanner is is ready to break out there soon. He's got two first names, or he's got kind of weird. He is someone I think the staff looks at pretty highly, even though we haven't really seen it. I think that's something that could be around the corner there. Casey Rogers is also pretty highly thought of by the coaching staff.
Right.
I think that I'm with you. I think it's probably at worst a wash. Otherwise, I think this might be marginally better as a position group overall.
Like if the linebacker play, if it really improved, I don't think I'd be shocked. I'd be like, okay, yeah, let's go. Because again, that's a position that they had a lot of emphasis on recruiting wise, and bringing Mike Dawson back, that's gotta be huge, you know, because that, again,
we didn't even touch on JoJo,
yeah,
who's going to be the leader really of this group overall. And I think we've all seen what he can do and feel like JoJo is ready to be a real star on the defense,
right?
And I don't, you know, necessarily mean he's going to be, you know, an all Big 12 first team selection or something like that. And he could be, in the future, I don't know,
right.
But I think we all look at JoJo and say JoJo's got something special about him compared to the rest of the roster.
He has a presence on the field that I hate to say it, but he kind of has that it.
The swagger.
Kind of, yeah. Because he makes big plays at critical times. And I think the first time I was like, who is this kid? Was the Ohio State game in 2018 when he sacked who was that quarterback? He's at Washington now.
Oh, I'm blanking on his name too.
Barrett. It's not JT Barrett.
No, it's
Haskins. Dwayne
Haskins.
JoJo just drills Haskins and causes a fumble, and it kind of, you know, turned the light on, like, who is this kid? And he's always he's not afraid to. I don't want to say he's not afraid to make a mistake, but he's not afraid to go 100%, which I think some guys get hesitant and they kind of freeze up and just like think, what do I got to do? Where do I have to be? You know, and JoJo's like, I'm going after the ball.
It's funny you say you that. Know? That's Scott's whole that's Scott's mantra, right? That's his entire thing. No fear of failure. You know, I think Scott prefers that, and I think that JoJo is a shining example of what somebody can look like when they really embrace that.
Sure.
Which is like, I might make a mistake, but if I can go back and correct that in film,
sure,
I'll get better from it, and I'll just make that mistake less than I did before.
Right.
But if I get it right, you know, then all of a sudden you have a turnover against OSU, and all this, you know, you might be cooking, right?
Oh, for sure.
So the no fear of failure. That's a great life mantra, by the way.
It really is.
It really is. But for football, I think it is big, because if you have guys that are young and maybe second guessing themselves, or maybe even older and second guessing themselves because they've been kind of taught a certain way or whatever, getting in their head a little bit, you can kind of see someone who might even have a lot of natural talent and physical talent,
mm-hmm.
but they're not utilizing it because they're so caught up in their head.
Sure.
And so if you can get a guy to say, you are naturally and physically talented, I need you to utilize every bit of that. And if you make a mistake, we'll come back and try to correct it.
Right.
But in the meanwhile, I want to see you going 110% at whatever you think your assignment is.
Sure.
And we'll try to fix it along the way, because that's our job as coaches.
For sure. For sure. I'm this might be off base, but you know who might need a little of that JoJo attitude?
Is it Adrian?
It's Adrian.
Okay, yeah. I was just going to say.
Yeah, trust your instinct. Go with it. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. So. And to be fair to Adrian, I think some of it might have been the injuries.
Sure.
It's a lot harder to kind of trust your body to do something when you feel like your knee's not going to hold up, or your ankle's not going to hold up, or whatever the case may be.
Right.
But yes, I do agree with you, because I think when he was a freshman, and we're not going to get back into this, but as a freshman, you saw a little bit more, I'm going to trust myself and my ability. And
a little cowboy attitude.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. And I don't know if some of that had to do with maybe he hadn't been on the field in a little bit because of the injury in high school, and he was just ready to go.
Yeah.
And then he got coached up a lot. And as we all know, Verduzco is very unique and has his own, you know, I don't know what it is, 425-point system that he has, or what, I'm making it up, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I don't know if that guy has had the injuries. I don't know. But, yes, to that point with JoJo, he's got it. You hope that other players start to embrace that a little bit.
Sure.
I don't think JoJo's the most physically gifted player ever, but I think he – for whatever reason, he's around the ball at the right time.
Yes, and very frequently.
You know, I don't know. Does that have more to do with how the coaching staff has set him up? Maybe, I don't know. But all I know is we've seen a lot of good production from him in kind of limited time.
For sure.
And I think going forward, you should see him be the leader of that linebacker group, and you should see him probably make the most impact going into next year.
Sure. Get that.
Okay, so let's go to we can go cornerback and safety, but let's just call them D-backs overall.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on the defensive back position overall?
This will be the simplest one we've done. I feel fine about it. Yeah. Like I have no issues with the guys there. My only concern is if the D-line or linebackers can't get any pressure. You can only cover somebody for so long until somebody gets open. In the Big Ten, you're going to go up enough athletic wide receivers that will eventually get open if the quarterback has enough time. With DiCaprio, Boodle, Dismuke, Cam Taylor, I feel fine with those guys. That's the unit I feel most confident about on the field.
On the defense or overall?
Defense.
Defense, okay. Yeah, I think I agree. I think there is talent at the position, both who we think will probably be starting, and then in the depth. Noah Pola-Gates is a guy that has gotten a lot of attention. I think he famously, after a game where he did not play very well, was like, went to the locker room and worked out.
Yeah.
I mean, because he was like so kind of upset about how he played. So that's the mentality that you love to hear about.
Right.
I don't know if he's a starter this year. I don't know if he works his way into a starting position.
Yeah.
But he was also one of the more highly recruited guys going in the past. And we're not going to talk about ratings so much with all that. But it makes you feel good about the position overall if he's a guy who was rated fairly high and not even necessarily a starter.
Sure.
Right?
Right. Yeah. He sub guy, you know, and I, to kind of piggyback on that too, I think Braxton Clark, that could be another guy that you kind of see emerge, because there is some in that secondary. You got between Cam Taylor, Britt, Deontay Williams, Markell Dismuke, and DiCaprio Boodle. You got three seniors.
Yes. So guys with a lot of experience,
but
they've been at least with this staff the entire time.
Right.
They were not chosen by this staff, but they also have enough experience in the Big Ten that they should know what to expect. We're playing an exclusive Big Ten schedule, if at all,
right,
this year. So there shouldn't be any curveballs there. There shouldn't be anything that they haven't seen before.
Mm-hmm.
Dismuke is the guy that you really feel like should have a good leadership role.
Sure.
On the team, I think, beyond, more than anyone. I think Cam Britt's the guy that we think will be the standout.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
For sure.
Okay.
Yeah. He kind of had that a JoJo presence too, I thought. Like,
sure,
he wasn't afraid to, you know, go up and initiate contact.
A little bit of a difference maker.
Yeah.
You could see him making a big play when it mattered most.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I feel fine about that.
You think they're going to be better than last year or about the same?
I think they'll be better as a result of improved defensive line and linebacker play. I think between the defensive line and linebackers, I think that between those two, there is improvement somewhere in those two. And I think that leads to better production for the secondary too.
Yeah, I think so too. I think the cornerbacks, safeties, defensive backs as a whole will be better than last year. Because you do have a lot of returning experience. I think you do have some playmakers there, just talent overall. I say that kind of in line with what you're saying, which is that part of your reason to believe that they'll be better is that you think that you should get about the same or a little bit better front seven play, right?
Sure.
All that being said, this is not really a huge endorsement of Chenander from me. I'm not trying to hate on Chenander. Just overall, is your belief in the defense being marginally better or about the same, does that have really anything to do with Chenander per se? Or what are your thoughts on Chenander as a defensive coordinator?
I get where you're coming from. And I think that's maybe one thing that maybe all Husker fans can agree on, is just kind of being
hopeful, but not sold.
Cautiously optimistic.
There you go. That's
on
perfect.
Chenander.
Yeah,
I think that's the way. That's not a hot take at all. I think having Mike Dawson back will be helpful. I know they hired two defensive analysts, and I want to say one of them was in the NFL. I can't think of the names off the top of my head, but I think one or maybe both had NFL experience. So
I think one did
at least
Giants
one.
Or something. Yeah.
Yeah. So you got to think that making those kinds of adjustments does pay dividends somewhere. And they're the kind of adjustments that I'm very intrigued by, because it seems in the past we've gone scorched earth with defensive coordinators, whether it be going from Carl to Papuchis, Banker to Diaco. It's kind of nice to see some continuity there, and it's nice to see them make some adjustments without having to tear everything down. Is Chenander a 20-year guy? I don't know.
Yeah, my only concern with Chen is that he did not show me so much at UCF where I'm like, yep, he's the guy.
Right.
There's an argument to be made that the offense that Scott runs lends itself to having the defense be on its heels a little bit, and I get that, and that's a fair argument, and I'm not disagreeing with that. However, there's nothing that says you can't run a really good fast-paced offense and you can't have a good defense as well, right?
It's not mutually exclusive.
They're not mutually exclusive. There is a little bit of a built-in argument, excuse, whatever you want to call it, that you are putting your defense a little bit on its toes when it has to get back on the field so quickly. They just see more plays, and I get that, and that's fair, and I understand it. But for that reason, that's why I'm not totally 100% sold on Chenander. But I also don't think that he has performed so poorly with not a lot of talent coming into Nebraska, to be fair, where I think that we need to get rid of him or replace him, and we're not advocating for that here by any means.
Right.
But I am happy to see some continuity. I hope to see that as he's able to recruit the guys that he wants for his system, we're going to know in the next couple of years if Chenander's the guy or not.
Right.
And if he can coach a defense in the Big Ten that is able to withhold throughout a season and get us to where we want to be, which is where we're winning our division and at least competing for a Big Ten championship.
Sure.
We're going to know that in a couple of years. It's not going to take five or 10 years.
Right.
I think in 3-4 years, we should have a good idea about where Chenander is as a defensive coordinator.
For sure.
And it's going to come down to if we trust Scott to say, well, I'm going to keep a guy that I think it can do it or not. I'm not really too worried about that. I think Scott's going to fire anyone he thinks can't do the job.
I agree. I think Scott, like you mentioned earlier, Scott wants to win.
Yeah.
And there's the only reason, I shouldn't say the only reason, one of the biggest reasons that I think this will work overall with Scott as the coach is there's not a person on planet Earth that wants this more than Scott.
I agree with that wholeheartedly.
And if that means making a tough decision with a friend, you know, he knew that was the case coming into this. And I trust the way he would go about it would be in a dignified manner, because it kind of feels that was the case with Troy Walters,
mm-hmm.
Which we can get into, you know, some of the new faces, you know, among the staff. I don't know what the Troy Walters departure was. If Troy was just looking for something else, I forget where he ended up. No, he's at Cincinnati.
Yes,
he's at the Bengals.
Right.
He's at the Bengals. So maybe Troy was just looking for a different pursuit, and that's fine. But I think the way it was handled was dignified, and I think that the way it was handled, I think makes it look attractive to other coaches out there.
Because sure.
With the way it's been handled with so many other guys, is it just makes Nebraska look like a toxic place. Mm-hmm. And for a while, it kind of has been for coaches. I don't blame a coach for looking at Nebraska and thinking, I don't want to go there.
And with Chenander, if he didn't follow Scott's in Nebraska, is Chenander getting a defensive coordinator job elsewhere? In a Power 5, I think certainly not in a Power 5. In a Group of 6, maybe. I can't say with certainty that Chenander was going to get a defensive coordinator position had he not followed Scott's in Nebraska. And that's because you didn't see an outstanding defense at UCF.
Right. It was
I'm not – by any means, I'm not saying that Scott was his meal ticket or anything like that. I'm just saying I think there is a pressure on Chenander to say, like, I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
And – he understands what the Big Ten's about. He played at Iowa.
You know,
this isn't new to him.
Right.
So there's some familiarity there. But we're cautiously optimistic he can do it. We're cautiously optimistic that he will recruit the talent he needs, the players mm-hmm. that he wants for mm-hmm. his system. And I think in the next couple of years, and again, maybe not this year, but 3-4 years from now, we're going to have a good idea whether or not he's that guy.
Right. For sure.
Okay. So we will wrap it up there, and we will pick it up on our next episode with week by week, the new Big Ten exclusive mm-hmm. schedule that we have. And we will kind of do a win-loss record and how we think each of those games is going to go. It's not going to be pretty. I'm going to give you a heads up right now. It's going to be rough, but we're going to get through it together.
That's right, together.
Signing off on our last episode. Thanks for listening. Appreciate it. And
Thank
we
you.
Will see you next time.
Later.